You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
But now, of course, being the second Wednesday of the month, it's time for our legal hour. We have the big man himself, Grant Hutchinson, and also Tristan with us this afternoon. So welcome, gentlemen.
G'day. It's good to be with you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, okay. But I can't hear Tristan.
Oh, there we go. I was being polite. Maybe it's not the best for me to be polite. Thanks for having me in today. It's a pleasure to be here.
No worries. It's letting the big man himself get the words in first.
You know, you make, when you say big man...
No, hang on, you're not. Like you're not on air, Grant.
Yeah, well, I thought I couldn't... Normally it sounds different when I'm...
Is that might be my turn to take over.
Hang on, we've got a problem.
No, look, don't worry.
Now you're right.
Okay. So, yeah, great to be with you. And when you call me the big man, it makes me feel like I've put on weight.
No. I've lost a bit. But anyway, you didn't even mention that.
Actually, turn around. I think I found it.
I meant big as in you're up the chain down there at Hutchinson Legal. But anyway, Tristan, I got to ask you, how long have you been with... Hutchinson Legal?
About 18 years I've been
here. You're bringing someone's only a month or here.
Well, he's... Sometimes you have to reward long service, and that's what... So we're mixing it up for you.
So he gets rewarded because he came to me. Is that the idea?
If he stays for another 18 years after this, if he gets to 36, he'll get to come again.
Play my cards right, hey?
Tristan usually brings someone that's about a month or two, and he says, if you don't... Can't stick it out with Al, you haven't got a job. Anyway, now, what did we send you away with? We sent you away with some questions.
You did. It was about the process after sentencing and the percentage of appeals that are successful and what are the potential grounds for appeal, law and fact. Do you want me to answer them or do you want Tristan to answer them?
No, you've got
Maybe you
paper.
Take it away, Grant.
Where you go, bud?
Look, you're right. When the judge says take them down, that's normally... Sentencing doesn't mean you're going to jail.
No.
And I want to assure you of that, Alan, in case something happens to you. It can be that you get a fine or some other type of diversion.
The question was, if it's a criminal... I've got a cramp in my leg. If it's a criminal case, what happens then?
Okay, well, not all criminal cases result in imprisonment.
Right.
It can result in imprisonment.
I guess we're more talking about one that does, but tell us both sides.
Okay, so there can be, if you're given a non-custodial sentence, like a fine or a community service, then you'll be told how and when to comply. So they'll tell you what in America you see these road gangs and other things. That's normally prisoners that are taken out to do work. But they're, in Australia it's more, having been a penal colony, we're a lot more civilised in how we handle our prisoners. Yep. And
some of the prisons actually do make things. I mean, I don't know if they still do, but I used to sell timber to the Sale prison and they used to make furniture.
Yeah, look, I'm sure they do. It's you really need to make sure that they're reliable with their tools and they only use it on the wood. I think we're going beyond the question.
We're going beyond what the question
making
was.
Making license plates, and I've seen that in the old movies.
Or what was the film where...
No, come on.
Oh, okay, get back. Do you want to talk about Valentine's Day?
No.
If someone's been found guilty and sentenced, what now?
Yes.
Well, the story doesn't end there. After sentencing, a few things can happen. If they're going to prison, they're taken into custody, and sometimes immediately, sometimes later. It could be you are... So when it's a serious indictable offence, such as murder, rape or other things, you don't want to say, we'll come back in a little while. You want to take them down and I know what happens because I've met somebody who's been taken down and then you get a last chance to tell your lawyer what a good job they've done.
So... let's just go back one stage.
Yeah,
all right.
Sure.
So the foreman of the jury comes back and he says, guilty, Your Honour, however many charges.
Normally they hand a note and the judge announces it so that there's a disassociation from the jury. But, keep going. You've been watching too much of Gregory Peck.
This is the part of the whole question. So the judge then dismisses the jury because the jury doesn't stay in any longer.
Done its job.
It just says, go home. So what does a judge do then? Does he say, arrest these people? But they're already under arrest, aren't they? So how does he... What's the actual final on that court?
There is
that
a
day?
Huge difference before and after being found guilty.
Yes.
Because, one, you're being held and there's a presumption of innocence.
Innocence, yep.
Once you're found guilty, you are a prisoner of the state and you can expect to be dealt with differently. I remember driving a guy in who, having been found guilty, was told, come back and we'll tell you what your sentence is. Yep. So obviously pack your toothbrush because off you're going. Yep. You don't actually get to pack anything much. So you take your wits with you and hopefully you emerge the other side with some sanity and hopefully you've learned your lessons and you and society are better, both during and after. But normally, if it's a matter where, if you've announced somebody's going to spend the next, they expect the next 20 to 30 years in jail... if they've a murder or multiple murders or whatever, then you could expect that sometimes people do stupid things. So they keep them in custody and allow them to, because they do monitor for mental health and other things. Believe it or not, it's not like the First Fleet.
No. All right. So after the court case,
yes,
we'll say it's a murder or it's a major case. So how long before you would expect that to go back to before the sentencing? It's not the next day.
No. Well, a judge can make a determination, but they normally hear the representative of the, at that stage, convicted person.
Yep.
As to sentence. But they also hear from victims. They hear victim impact statements.
Right.
So the judge gets to find out what has this person done? Because it's more than just killing a person. It impacts... Tristan. If I was to kill Tristan, it's more likely you would.
No.
But then, effectively, it's not just Tristan. It's Tristan's wife, his two... We won't give... And so the victim impact statements go to... Or if I was unsuccessful and he ends up with a permanent injury... there's all sorts of things that the court wants to hear because it should be considered by the court in determining what happens next. Does that make sense?
So, yeah, that does. So, all right, we'll say 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, you come back and you have your impact statement. Does the judge then say straight away, you've got 20 years, 30 years, or does he then go away and think about it?
By the way, I'll pick you up, you misogynist. I know you're not really a misogynist. No. You're just old-fashioned. Although he does look young today, doesn't he? He's lost
seen some
weight.
Nice photos up on the walls.
Anyway, getting back to the question. Yep. So what was your question again?
Once you get the person in there, yes, and you've decided what they're going to... you've listened to the impact statement and all that.
Oh,
so
the judge,
after that before the judge?
Whatever time the judge needs. But normally it wouldn't take that long because the judges, they will listen to the victim impact statements and may well refer to it in passing sentence.
Yep.
But in the end, and they'll also hear about the unfortunate childhood or whatever else has impacted the perpetrator. They'll balance those things, then come up with a sentence. And normally there's the headline and the bottom sentence. So they might say 26 years with a 24 minimum.
Yep. All right.
And that means that they're not eligible for, if they behave themselves. Yep. It gives them an incentive to behave themselves, but it also gives the authorities to control the person so they get out on parole. And that could last for another 5 years that they're on, they're answerable. Well, remember Chopper Reid said... When he was offered parole just a little bit before, he said, no, thanks, I'll finish my sentence. Yeah, and then he walks out and he's done his time.
Done his time. All right, so does the sentencing take place after they're found convicted,
yes,
before an appeal, or does the judge have to wait until the appeal is heard? He doesn't, does he?
He or she, sorry. Why don't we just say the judge?
Yeah, the judge.
Can
His Honour or Her Honour.
I'm not going to touch that. just HH.
Right.
it would be basically you can appeal on two things. You can appeal on sentence, as in you've sentenced me to 100 years and I should have only got 85.
Yep.
So
yep.
gravity of sentence, or you can appeal on conviction. That is, I shouldn't have been convicted because some evidence that shouldn't have been admitted was admitted, and on a point of law, I should not be found guilty because you allowed into something. You remember these American cases, because it's better that we refer to those, where without proper cause, they've searched a car, or they've searched, and suddenly all the evidence they find in the car, suddenly inadmissible. They find, you know, all sorts of things, and they can't use that in court because there wasn't probable cause to, or reasonable grounds, we would say, to undertake the search, because, you know, you can't just, you've got to do it within your parameters. And that comes to another point that we'll discuss after this, if you want to, which is ultra vires. When do people act beyond their powers?
We'll do that. I've got to take a break and we'll be back with more.
Bartender looked at me like, pony up, man, we're closing down. Paid the tab, I turned around. Got on that phone on the way home. Ended up down the rabbit hole again. Funny how you haven't changed a bit, but you're twice as pretty. Glad you finally got to see New York City. And I know it's not a race, but it looks like you're getting over me faster than I'm getting over you. But hey, what you gonna do? I'm sick of sitting at the house. I was somewhere I can be alone. Try to let you go. Something always reminds me. I've been breaking up was easy in the 90s. I'm tired of getting drunk. Tired of being free. Tired of seeing pictures I don't want to see. Girl, you're everywhere. Everywhere but behind me. I've been breaking up was easy in the 90s. Back then, I could have convinced myself that maybe you called when I was out. You didn't know what to say, so you didn't leave a message. And that you're probably at home right now, sound asleep. Cause going out isn't really your thing. And I wouldn't have a clue what you've been up to lately. Or who you've been up to it with. But when I don't miss your calls, I miss you calling. And I go round and round again. I'm sick of sitting at the house, dying on my phone. Wishing I was somewhere I can be alone. Try to let you go. Wishing I was somewhere I could be alone. I try to let you go, and something always reminds me. I've been breaking up, it was easy in the 90s. I'm tired of getting drunk, tired of being free. Tired of seeing pictures I don't wanna see. Girl, you're everywhere, everywhere but behind me. I've been breaking up, it was easy in the 90s.
Listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back, and we talk to our friends from Hutchison Legal. Now, Tristan, you've been sitting here listening to us ramble on, Grant, myself. You want to talk about people exceeding their authority, because I've got a couple of questions we want to send your way about that too, but we'll hear what you've got to say, and then later on I'll ask you to go away and come back with a bit more information. Yeah. So,
do you mind if I take this one, Tristan?
I was about to, but I was just going to say, Alan, it's my first day on the job, so...
No, you've been there a long while. And, go for it, Grant.
Look, it's one of those things that acting within your power, acting within your authority. If a policeman decided that I've got the authority to not just enforce, not just take people, but I'll take them home and put them in a shed out the back, and I'll imprison them myself.
Yep.
That would be beyond his or her authority, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
So, acting beyond your authority, becoming not just the judge but the jury and the executioner, or the prison warden,
yep,
is beyond authority. Everybody, when a policeman is commissioned, he's commissioned with a set of authorities that, yep, he's got certain rights. I remember when I used to work for Treasury.
It's the same. I don't want to cut across you,
no,
but it's the same thing that we've been talking about in the papers about self-defence, hasn't it? We've got a certain power of authority,
yep,
but if you exceed that, you could want him in jail. Is that the same thing?
Not really. Right. I'd say it's... So ultra vires is Latin for beyond the power. So what power do you have, and what power do you pretend that you have,
yep,
and you start behaving as if you've got more power? So it could be the Australian government, quite often, sometimes they come up with legislation and people say, that's beyond the power. The Australian government is subject to the Constitution. It's, yep, not that it rides above the Constitution. We believe in Australia in what's called rule of law. Yep. That is, the law governs what laws state parliaments can pass, yep, what local council can do, what federal, state and local council, but also government bodies such as, Quango is what they're sometimes referred to, but the milk board, what they can do. Yep. So everybody has to act within their power or authority, if that makes sense. So, yep, when you step aside from that, then you're acting ultra vires, beyond the power.
Is that mean illegal?
Well, it leads to certain consequences, but certainly, let's say the Australian government brings out legislation that's just not enforceable. It's just, well, they pass a law and the High Court then considers it and says, well, which head of power under the Constitution, the Australian Constitution, did you rely on in passing this? Well, Your Honour, the Attorney General looks a bit squirmish and says, well, I think it might fall under the corporations law. No. A lot of things get under external treaties. So, yep, things that people couldn't pass in the past, and suddenly, we've signed a treaty with the rest of the world about protection of this or that. And, so there's been imaginative ways that power has increased for the federal government. Under certain ways, and certainly corporations law is one of them, but you've got to stick to your lane. You just, if, for instance, let's say there's the corporation's power, so the federal government can pass laws for the corporations. If they started doing it for sole traders that aren't a company, just a mum or dad that set up a milk bar and don't have a company, then they're acting beyond their powers. That's why there's often mirroring legislation that state governments do, or complementary legislation that fit with the federal. So sometimes you're referring to the state, sometimes you're referring to the federal. And it can seem clunky, but it's everybody staying in their lane. And when the federal government goes outside, the High Court says, not a valid law, strikes it down. And it has happened.
So the High Court, in some ways, they make the laws, they can overrule the government, can't they?
Interesting you put it that way. We believe in a Westminster system, which is a separation of powers.
Yeah.
So you've got...
But then they've got the High Court still got the final say, though, haven't they?
They interpret. Of course, remember this, that the Parliament through the Governor-General, appoints the people on the High Court. So,
yep,
remember, all of these hearings in the US, who gets appointed to their Supreme Court, in our system, the Supreme Court is this top state court,
yep,
but the High Court is above that.
Yep.
And when there used to be appeals to the Privy Council when we were a subservient, Gough Whitlam got rid of that thing. There's some things that Gough did. Anyway, let's not go...
No, we're not political.
We're not political. Well, let's just say different sides of Parliament have done different things, but we are free from appeals to the Privy Council, where English lords would then determine whether our High Court got it right.
Yep.
So High Court's the last authority, and I might have got my dates wrong there, but we now just look to the High Court. as the final authority, final arbiter of what takes place in Australia. When you say they can do things, yes and no, they've got to do it. They're trained as lawyers to... It's a very simple thing to be a lawyer. You need to be a...
I'm not touching that.
No. It's really this easy. Because all you're taught in law... Well, you're taught a bit of the law, but you've got to keep up to date. Anyone who thinks they know the law because they knew it yesterday may get caught out because the case has been determined in the meantime. Yep. A judge has made common law, which is seen as always being the law. So we need to basically... ensure that the law is observed, and the High Court will make sure that people don't step out of their lanes. But they shouldn't step out of the lanes themselves, because they generally have a respect for the law and a desire to see
it. They are the law, aren't they?
But a subsequent High Court can overrule a previous High Court decision.
So, all right, let's just, for one second, I don't want to go down this much further, but if you've got a High Court, now you said they can, how many times can you go to the High Court?
How many times do you want to go?
No, but I'm saying, though, if you don't like the first outcome, are you saying you keep going back?
No, well, look, the High Court generally works on this basis that you need special leave to appeal a decision to the High Court.
And and what special leave? There's got to be some possibility that you're going to win, isn't it? Is that the
offense,
idea?
But there's so many people who say, you know, I've been dudded by the law and I want my chance to... The High Court will often say we're not giving special leave because there's no particular interest in this. So Mabo was a good case where they said this is of interest, this is relevant, this is impacts Australian society. But and unfortunately, I know a mate who, the law was quite settled in a particular area of quantum merit and construction, and the High Court decided, even though the case had been decided correctly under the existing law, they said, I think they got the case and decided to come to a different decision in terms of what the law might look like. So it's they can evolve and take things because they... I don't know that I'm answering your question except to say it's more complicated.
I think we might take a break and we'll come back and start again.
to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Well, I'm talking to our friends down at Hutchison Legal Plus, Grant and Tristan. And Tristan, you've been able to sit there probably for half an hour and say nothing, so we need to find out a bit about yourself. How long have you been with Hutchison Legal?
So I've been with Hutchison Legal for about 18 years now. The time has just gone incredibly fast. I cannot believe that it's gone that quickly and I've been there that long. It feels like maybe 5-7 years I've been there.
So what do you do in the normal, like, you're a lawyer, obviously.
No, not a lawyer myself.
Oh, you're not a lawyer?
No.
Oh, right.
Well, I've seen how much stress they put up with and...
It's, you don't do it.
No.
So what's your job then? Like, do you support a particular lawyer or do they send you off to find all these different bits and pieces that they need?
Yeah, over the years I've done lots of different things. Years ago I was a settlement agent, so I'd turn up for property settlements. And that was back when.
Well, most of it's done online now, isn't
it? Yeah, that's what I was saying. We don't do that anymore. Yep. You know, I used to turn up with a title and bank checks and all these other various forms.
Remember those days?
Yep. Yeah, and now trying to explain to people that a paper title doesn't exist anymore. It's an ECT, electronic title.
Yep.
And that just, a lot of people have trouble understanding that.
Yep.
And understanding who holds control of that electronic title.
Yep.
Because it doesn't exist. It's electronic.
Just not there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, also, you get a few people that do the con act too, don't you? That where they try to make a settlement they shouldn't get.
Has happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it's very interesting. Not quite as interesting as all the TV shows make it out to be, but it's still quite interesting.
So what... I don't say speciality in the word that you're a specialist, but what sort of part of the law intrigues you the most?
I'm more interested in sort of probate, the process of after somebody's passed away.
Yep.
Like they go through a process called probate.
Yep.
Most people aren't sure of that process when they ring up and you explain that to them.
Yep.
What happens, the steps to take, the guidance, and how to get the ball rolling on that.
How often is a will challenged, do you think? Like, would you say 10% of wills get challenged, 20%?
Yeah, what would you think, Bear Grant?
Yeah, it's hard to say, Alan and Tristan. It's one of those things that you see. It used to be a lot more often until former Attorney General Robert Clark.
He changed the rules.
He changed it so that a lot fewer people, because more and more people were feeling entitled. Oh, I should get a bit of, you know, Aunt Marjorie's or, you know, Grandma Banks's. I wanted access to that bank of Grandma, and it really limited it. So a lot less than it would have been, but for some wise legislative change, which both sides have embraced, and the judges have embraced. Normally they try to find ways around it, and they've basically held the line because it was just getting, well, I wouldn't say crazy, but let's just say more and more people were saying, I want a bit. And generally to run a case to challenge a will, and it normally gets paid out of the estate.
I was going to say that. The estate has to pay it, doesn't it?
Well, not always, but, you know, unless there's particular reasons. And it can easily cost $50,000 per party. So, you know, it was almost, it led to nuisance payments or significant payments being made to nuisance claims because you just knew that the estate, bottom line, another $50,000 was going to go. And who knows, with prices going as they are, you know, that might now be $75,000.
It's good to get started. All right, I'm going to take one more quick break and then we're going to come back. And what are we going to talk about? I've got a couple of questions for you.
Oh, we'll take your questions and we won't answer them, Alan. Don't you worry.
Feels alright. Baby, take it on, you keep me up all night.
scrapes and gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back. Now, Greg's got a joke. Grant's got a joke.
Well, if Greg's got a joke, we should listen to Greg. But look, I know I heard about Bugs Bunny getting an Elmer Fudd. They broke into Four Pillars Distillery and Bugs turns to Elmer and says, "Is this whiskey?" And Elmer says,
Not
whiskey. No, not whiskey, but not as whiskey as whopping your bank.
All right, just while he's a good lawyer. All
right. We got there.
I'm going to give you the questions for next time.
Yes.
Someone going to write them down for me? The first one is, when you give someone a power of attorney, yeah, and well, particularly we're talking now a medical power of attorney,
yeah,
how can you guarantee that those... that will be carried out? Do you, can you put stipulations on it? And I mean, it could be a case where a person says, "I don't want to be resuscitated," and then the person who does it decides, "Yes, they do." So, what's happened here? Anyway, something's gone wrong here. How can you assure that that will be done?
Great question.
Says he with a mouthful.
Timing is everything.
All right, so can you find that out as to how a person can put a stipulation on what's going to happen? And the other one is, strange you were talking about being out of...
beyond powers.
Out beyond your powers.
Ultra-virus, yep.
All right, a group gets... now, we're talking about a community group here.
Yep, yep, yep.
They get a donation and they decide they want to put it in a trust because they want to make sure this money can't be spent.
Yep.
What powers do the trustee have? Wouldn't they have to, once they've made a decision, discuss it with the board of the organisation that the money was donated to? Or can they just go out and say, "Well, we're going to give some of this money away"? So we need you to look at the trusts.
Okay, a good question. And I suppose, could I also ask, would you like to know whether they should consult the organisation that gave the gift in the first place?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So
then look at it from a third point of view. Ooh. If that person who donated the money is now dead.
That seems to happen a lot these days.
Yeah, well... but let's face it, that's going to alter it, isn't it?
Yes, okay. And we're looking forward to next month. So the second Wednesday of next month, for your listeners and viewers,
yep,
they want to tune in and listen to Tristan and Jill.
Who's Jill?
Jill's just
married to Jack.
All right, I'm going to take a quick break and I'm going to try and get over this and I'll be straight back.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back. Now, Grant, I don't want to get political. You know, I don't talk politics in this show at all.
Absolutely.
However, we're, at the moment, we're going being told that the state government want to legislate to that people are allowed to work from home for 2 days. Now, if I'm a small businessman, I surely, if I'm employing the people, I've got the right to decide what hours they work and when they work. But, I mean, can a government do that?
It almost fits in well, doesn't it, Alan, with the idea of when does somebody go beyond their power?
Yep.
Or even if it is within their power, is it the right thing to do? So the idea of flexibility around workplace, I think most people will say we're all for it. Yep. Flexibility is a key to happy workplace and also can lead to greater productivity.
Yep.
But when it is legislated, this is when governments get involved. Reagan said it well. Government... they seem to, if they see a business doing well, they'll tax it. If it stops moving, then they want to move the next step and they want to regulate it. And if it falls over dead, they want to subsidise it. And this is what happens in life.
Yep.
It, quite often, governments don't. They are not business people.
No.
They don't get it.
Yep.
And so by telling employers what to do with their employees. There's when somebody is hired for a job and they're asked, are you okay coming in 5 days a week because we run a butcher's and we need to chop up the lambs and chop up the whatever, and then the government says, oh, they don't have to come in 2 days a week. What are you doing? Sending a sheep around to be slaughtered at their backyard? I mean, seriously, governments don't get it. And so they need to understand that there are some things they need. Trade unions are a good thing when they understand it's about safety.
Yep.
And about providing for workers. But when that or the trade union governments decide that they are going to go they beyond what they should, they can stuff the economy. And so productivity is the key. We are going to be a poorer country if we can't be more productive and staying at home when you need to be in the office. I just know the collegial environment where people can talk about things. If you're at home, it takes 3 or 4 emails, sometimes 5 or 6, to do the same as could be done in less than 30 seconds in person. So it's really a question of, does government really know what they're doing? But from a legal point of view, I don't know that it's going to be beyond their powers to legislate, although I'm pretty sure it's going to be appealed to the High Court when they do it, because maybe it is. Maybe there are some things that you just need to allow freedom of enterprise. We believe, you know, freedom of enterprise, freedom of conscience, freedom of worship, freedom. There's a whole lot of freedoms that we believe in as Australians. That's why people went and fought and died under that flag over there that you've got there, because they believe in the freedoms. We're not a totalitarian state.
Yep.
We're not where the state knows best, but some people believe governments know better than individuals how individuals should live their life.
Yep.
They even are telling employees how they should live their life. I think this is a policy in search of a problem, because flexibility is there. You just change job to another one that's more flexible.
And some business owners have great rapport with their workers, and they do have flexible arrangements. But
why would you have a bad relationship with your employees if you can you work alongside them to get the best outcome for everybody.
It's
not always possible, but you try.
I mean, your employees are your greatest asset. Anyway, I want to get off that. But
do you want to talk about football? Because I back for Essendon.
Oh, yeah. Well, all right. Next week. I've got about three and a half minutes. You got something else you want to...
I think Tristan was wanting to tell you about his son who plays footy.
Does he? Where does your son play footy?
My son's in Croydon Blues under 9s.
Is he?
Two boys who play footy and they absolutely love their footy.
How's the footy going?
It's just finished, so I think it's going pretty good at the moment. So we've got 1 day of the weekend back. So.
But do they both play in the... No, they wouldn't play in the same team, would they?
No, they're a couple of years apart.
Therefore, you've got to go twice. You've got to go to two matches.
Two matches, sometimes same time, but different places. It just... Occasionally it lines up, but not all the time.
Yeah, so. Can be hard, can't it? Did you play football yourself?
No, not myself. I never played, so...
All right, let me ask you one quick question. Seeing we were talking about you and you've sat there most of the time and haven't been able to say much, what made you wanted to get to work for a law company? Have you always worked for a law company or did you do something else first?
I've worked in a lot of other industries and I knew Grant before I started working there.
Yep. And you're still in?
Yeah, we're still turned up. I said, are you sure? And I went along and, yeah, it's not what I thought it'd be. I thoroughly enjoyed the time. So it's,
you didn't think it was going to be that good?
No, I thought it was going to be quite boring, but it can be quite lively and a really good bunch of people to be working with.
You said you've done other jobs. What sort of jobs were they?
I've worked for Smorgon Steel up in Queensland.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I worked for Kentucky for a little while. Just lots of various places of just...
Because you've moved around, from state to state, or just because you moved from different job to different job?
Yeah, did the very common thing of I don't like the cold weather so much.
Yep.
So headed north and then found out it can still get cold there. So yeah. I ended up coming back. So
how long were you up in Queensland?
A good few years.
So, oh, were you? Yeah, because so, a lot of people do that, don't they? They go up there and the days are warm.
Yeah.
And then when you get into winter and that can get quite cool.
Yeah, that's I was surprised one morning I had to stop off and buy a jumper on the way to work. And it's like, I may as well be back home.
I remember talking to somebody and it was my father actually. He took a trip up to Alice Springs when he was alive and he turned up there. It was 28 or 30 or 32 or something, like really hot. And he got up next morning, it was 2 degrees. He said, I couldn't believe it. You know, you sort of think some of those places are hot all the time, but obviously Alice, and I've spoken to a few of them, been Alice, and that can get very cold at night.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite surprising. You go with an idea and sometimes it's not that idea. So.
Well, a lot of people do that.
But tell them about the time you were just paddling in the middle of the ocean around one of the islands. That was...
Oh, yes, I used to work on one of the islands up there and you could go for a swim and there'd be... turtles swimming around. Oh. Like it was quite lovely, so.
I don't know about that. Guys, I've got to go. The news is knocking on the door. Thanks for your coming again today and we look forward to talking to somebody from Hutchinson Legal same time.
Or your lawyer. But somebody.
Somebody from there. Take same time. So Tricia, it was good to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you, Alan.
And obviously you're not one that's only going to be there for a week or two because you've been there for 8 years anyway. And it's always good to catch up with you, Grant.
Thanks, Alan. It's always good to see you, mate.
We always have a bit of fun. And coming up, of course, now will be the 2 o'clock news and that'll be followed by we're going to be talking about, well, it's a rotary, start off as a rotary project, but it's wheelchairs for kids. So we'll be talking to them.